You're listening to Mood Swings by Robert Wackington. And this is podcast episode number 9. You know, over the course of the last 8 or so podcasts, I had different things that I wanted to talk about, but it ended up me being kind of selfish and talking about myself and school and acting and things like that. Well, this particular episode, I want to talk about music. So, what do you guys listen to? It's a legitimate question, you know. As far as what I listen to heavy metal music. There you go. Heavy Metal Bob. That's been a nickname of mine since I was in junior high school. It was given to me by somebody that knew me, that knew that I listened to heavy metal music, and so they just started calling me Heavy Metal Bob, and it stuck from that point on. I mean, even nowadays, I get people from high school that still call me Heavy Metal Bob, and you know, I think it's great and everything, but you know, I mean, it just personifies the music that I listen to, and it always had. So, you know, over the course of that many years, I'm not going to say how many years, but I mean, geez, over the course of that many years, I've listened to a lot of different heavy metal music, and you know, it depends on my mood, I guess. I'll listen to, you know, like the hair bands of the 80s, which is what I was into back then, you know, like Motley Crue or later on it was Poison. You know, I was listening to bands like Judas Priest and, you know, just all the bands that you basically were told not to listen to, because if you listened to them, you were like a devil worshiper. But, you know, to me, it wasn't like that. It was an attitude, obviously. It was the style of music, you know, the heaviness, just, it basically helped me up when I was feeling down. I'd just turn on, you know, something from, oh, I don't know, Twisted Sister. Yeah, listen to Twisted Sister, and the, you know, the music would be, you know, heavy, but it had sort of a poppy flavor to it. You know, a lot of those bands, they played on the radio, but then there was a lot of the heavier bands that I have listened to that I do like, but don't really pay much attention to. You know, like the heavier stuff, like Slayer and Venom, and you know, you're getting into like speed metal bands when you're talking about them, but was never really into them. You know, Metallica was one of them. They started out as sort of speed metal from what I can remember, but then they, you know, over the years they started playing differently, and you know, for me, I identify with the drums, so you know, anything that deals with speed metal, it's like it's got like that really fast drum beat, you know, and then you got the guitars that are constantly going, you know, that type of sound. I mean, it's good for some things, but that's not really what I'm into. You know, I'm into like the groove metal bands of like the 90s. Well, the only real groove metal band of the 90s was Pantera. You know, even though I was kind of a late bloomer with Pantera, I still like their music. I mean, the way that they play fast and then they play slow and melodic, and in the way that, you know, the guitar sounded so different, you know, than what was being played at the time. You know, at that time I was more into, you know, Pearl Jam and Nirvana, and which was, you know, they weren't really considered heavy metal music, but they were considered like alternative metal and alternative rock. You know, but you know, over time things change, and you know, genres become different things, and you know, the way that the music mixes and matches. It's crazy with the amount of different things that you can come up with that, you know, as a musician, I think it's crazy enough that a guitar player could come up with a riff that would more or less be different than anything that's ever been played before. I mean, how does that happen? You know, so, but like as a drummer, you know, I mean, drum beats pretty much remain the same. There's different variations and things like that, but, you know, I mean, as a drummer growing up, I would emulate these players, you know, the drummers from different bands, and try and play what they played. And being in high school band, I was able to learn how to read music and be able to apply what I see or what I saw to the drums. It just gave it a whole new meaning and everything for me. So the way the stickings showed up on paper, I was able to practice that and emulate it, you know, play it to the point, to the best of my ability, and you know, just be able to progress from there. And so playing the drums, it's a little difficult. I mean, you almost have to have, like, you know, four-way independence. You know, each arm and each leg is doing something different. And then your brain has to divide all that up. So, you know, like when you're playing a basic rock beat, which is in 4/4 time, you would, in your mind, you're thinking, okay, the bass drum and the hi-hat would be on 1 and 3, whereas the snare drum, which is the backbeat to any real rock drum beat, is on 2 and 4, but you're also hitting the hi-hat as well. So you're basically playing quarter notes or eighth notes, which would count as 1 and 2 and, or 1, 2, 3, 4 on the hi-hat. But at the same time, you're playing 1 and 3 on the bass drum and 2 and 4 on the snare drum. So you've got like that three-way independence there that's going on. And then once you're like rolling around the drum set to the different, you know, you got toms, the rack toms, the floor toms, the cymbals. The cymbals are more for accent. You know, you can get decent enough sounds by just choosing the particular cymbals that you like to play, or at least that sound good to you. And that, like I said, they're for accent. You know, when you're playing a simple drum beat, you could actually play, say, like the crash cymbal on 1, which would substitute for the hi-hat sound. And then you play your bass drum and your crash cymbal on 1, which would be sort of an accent. And then you would play the rest of your, you know, your stickings on the hi-hat, snare drum, and bass drum. So if you're counting off as, you know, as eighth note in 4/4 time, 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and, you'd play 1 on the crash cymbal and bass drum, and then bring your whichever hand you lead with to the hi-hat, and to play the and of that particular beat. So you've got that crash, hi-hat, snare drum, bass drum, snare drum, with a hi-hat playing the eighth notes, you know. So it's tricky, you know. I mean, you gotta have that four-way independence, or three-way independence, depending on how you play. I mean, but drums have always been a favorite instrument of mine, you know, ever since I was a kid. You know, my grandparents, they bought me my first toy snare drum when I was like 3 years old, and I destroyed that thing, you know. I mean, when you're 3 years old, obviously you destroy a lot of things, but I can remember as far back as that, being 3 years old, and just trashing the hell out of that snare drum, that toy snare drum. And it was just, for me, it was a starting point, you know, and from there I always gravitated towards the drums or percussion when I was in school. When I was in grade school, I, you know, they'd say, come over here and play the guitar. And I'd be like, no, 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 I'm going over here to the drums. So, and that's how it started, really. I mean, I listened to music up until I was in high school. And then I realized when I took my music classes that this was for me. You know, I would listen to music at home. I didn't really have anything to play along with. You know, as far as the listening to bands like Motley Crue or whatever, you know, I'd just be hitting my knees, basically, with my hands and keeping beat and time or whatever. Just, if I heard a particular drum sound, I would try and emulate it. But, it wasn't until I got to be like a junior in high school when, you know, my grandparents, they bought me a drum set, you know, and in the meantime, I was doing all that I could to pay for, you know, the hardware and the cymbals and everything, but, you know, they just bought like what you would consider to be like a shell kit, you know. I had two bass drums, two floor toms, two rack toms, two snare drums. I don't know how many cymbals I ended up with, but, you know, I had them up until about 2003, and I, you know, been playing along with, you know, music or whatever, and I was in a couple of different bands. I, you know, moved to Seattle a couple of times in between, you know, school and graduating school, and then 2003 before I came out to the East Coast. But I mean, at that time I was planning to get the drums back and everything, but I defaulted on a consignment. So, but if any of you guys know where you can find a Garnet Red Yamaha Power Stage 2 drum set with Paiste cymbals and Drum Workshop hardware, let me know. I put them on consignment at the, what was that place called? The, what was it? In Albany, Oregon, there's something house. Can't remember the name of the place, but, anyway, I consigned the drums with them, defaulted on the consignment, and I found out that they later had either sold them or moved them someplace. I don't know what they did, but if any of you guys know where they are, let me know, because I'm willing to pay for them to come back. I want those drums. You know, over the last few years, I've had people that were interested in looking for me and everything. You know, and that's been nice and everything, but I still don't have those drums back. So, you know, I had cases for everything. So they were Garnet Red. They had like chrome hardware, Drum Workshop bass drum pedals, Drum Workshop cymbal stands, Paiste cymbals, and it was a, like, if I said it earlier, I think I said it was a Yamaha Power Stage 2 drum set. So let me know if you find it, because I'm very interested in getting it back. But, music is good. It passes the time and everything, but I'm trying to get back into it. So I want to start playing again. You know, hence finding the drum set that I used to have. But if I can't find it, I mean, I've got other means. I've been trying to get into a more traditional sounding drum set, you know, with Chinese type cymbals rather than Swiss cymbals or German cymbals or even, you know, Turkish cymbals for for me, I like that sound of the old traditional Chinese symbol. They have what they call a China type symbol, which has a turned up edge to it, that when you hit it, it sounds like you're hitting a trash can, which really sounds awesome. And when I was playing with my friend Nick Gasparino back in the 90s, I used to use it as like an accent symbol, and that it always sounded the coolest when I would hit that symbol. So anyway, there's a company called Wuhan. They're it's in fact a region in China, that it's a city or a town or whatever you want to call it, but they make Wuhan symbols, which are, you can get fairly cheap from a distributor. It's the only distributor in the United States which I happen to have a deal with, so I can get them for fairly cheap. But I'm, you know, gonna start building that up, get some heavy duty hardware. In the meantime, might have to, you know, get by with some slimmer hardware, some stuff that's not so heavy duty, but, you know, as long as I get to play again, that's all that matters. You know, a friend of mine, who is the director for the last film that I was in, Scott Goldberg, he and I are going to try and get something going if we can. I mean, I just need to get my equipment together and want to start playing, you know, music from bands like Pearl Jam and I guess the Smashing Pumpkins, and which is going to be kind of difficult for me because I haven't played in years, but, you know, I got to redevelop all my calluses and, you know, learn stickings again, and it's just going to be crazy, but in the end, I think it'll be fun because we get to be able to play in front of people, and from what I understand, we've got things lined up. We just need to start practicing and playing. But our little outfit's called the Electric Love Cats, which was sort of a play on a name that I had heard of, a band called the Electric Love Hogs. But, you know, I mean, as far as cats goes, I was thinking, you know, we're cool cats. You know, we're sort of jazzy, you know. So that's where the love cats came from. So, you know, and then eventually, hopefully, something will come of that. You know, I want to start playing again. I had fun playing that kind of music back in the 90s. You know, and I really hope that it works out for us. You know, just trying to stay busy. School starts in another week and a half. And at that point, you know, I'll be real busy. I have a movie coming out. Actually, not coming out. I have a movie that I'll be filming here in the next few weeks. It's called Framed Red by a new-to-me director. His name's Josh Bruce. He's down in South Jersey, or Central Jersey, I guess. And the film's called Framed Red. And I play a blind priest. I'm going to have to come up with some kind of a fake Italian accent, because it's a style of horror film that kind of reminds me of a spaghetti western kind of thing. I don't know if you guys know what a spaghetti western is, but They're the type of movies that, like, visually, they come across as being, I don't want to say fake, but almost intentionally fake, kind of. And then when you're listening to the way that the sound comes across, it's like it's overemphasized. You know, like, if, let's just say, a cowboy is walking through, he's walking into a bar. Okay, and you wouldn't necessarily hear his boots as he's walking across the floor, but in a spaghetti western, the sound is just like reverbed out. You can hear the feet. You can hear him stomping across the floor, even though he's walking across the floor, kind of thing. And then that's the way spaghetti westerns are. I mean, the audio is so over the top. You know, the visual aspect, it's just, you know, it's so far-fetched that it's funny, but it's like art, you know? I mean, it's good stuff. You just have to pay attention to it and you know, not laugh so much. Like, a lot of, like, the older Clint Eastwood films back in the 60s, he did a lot of spaghetti westerns back then, you know? There was a director, Sierra Leone? I think he did, like, Fistful of Dollars. Those are spaghetti westerns. You know, you see those films, and you'll know what I'm talking about. So, but yeah, I mean, I got that coming up. Then, what is it? What else? I got a few other things that I'm working on. I'm still trying to film my 5-minute short. That's, you know, got some details that I have to iron out for that particular thing, and hopefully I can start casting for that soon. You know, it's I figure that it would only take a day to shoot, but who knows? I mean, it's gonna take a little bit of money, I can tell you that much. Certain things that I want to do, it's gonna be expensive, so, you know, I'm gonna have to try and keep it as cheap as possible, but, you know, maybe I can cut corners or something, I don't know, but I want to get it filmed. You know, it's been something that I've been working on for a long time. My screenplay, Shadows at Midnight, I got the treatment or the outline all done, it's registered. I'm just still working on getting dialogue, you know. I mean, I got 20 pages of dialogue and then I just got stuck, so. But lately I've been coming up with different ideas and things like that. Hopefully I can start charting out some script or whatever, but yeah, that's going to be a constant thing for a while, and maybe I'll get that done as soon as possible. So, but you know, I'm glad to put this one out for you. I'm trying the best I can to come up with different ideas to talk about. Don't forget, I can plug anything that you want me to. Send me an email at robertleckington@gmail.com. You know, I'm constantly reading emails, so if you have something that you want to ask me or send to me or anything, robertleckington@gmail.com is the email to go to. But until the next episode, I hope that you guys take care of yourselves, and I'll talk to you again soon. Bye now.